Good afternoon again. I'm Charles Garland, the minister here at Midtown Presbyterian. A lot of you are places I don't know yet, a lot of friends and family, and it's really nice to have you. Thanks for coming. If you're in town, we aren't just meeting at 5 because it's Christmas Eve. We do this every week. So if you're a slacker and you like to sleep in and things, you know, we could be the church for you. But this is just a little bit of a truncated version of what we usually do each week in worship. During Advent, we've been going through a series about the grandmothers of Jesus, whom I assume are depicted in this picture on the front of the bulletin. You can figure that out. It's not true. But there are women listed in the genealogy of Jesus at the beginning of the New Testament. And all of them are a little sketchy. Like, they're broken, victimized, maybe pretty messy lives, the kind of people who think of themselves like maybe they're a lost cause. And all of them find redemption from God and His mercy and are all part of the line of Jesus, who's going to come to find and rescue us. Right? And so their inclusion in that genealogy sort of makes you feel like there's no lost causes. Right? There's hope for anybody in the mercy of God. And so that's been kind of the fun of looking at them. We're going to look, the last one is called Uriah's wife. We call her Bathsheba. But that's next week. We're going to look at her story too. The one that kind of stands out, though, in the grandmothers of Jesus list is Mary. Because she's not messy at all. Right? I mean, some people say she's really not messy. Right? Maybe never sinned. I'm not convinced of that. But her life is pretty together. And what you see in her story, though, is just as when Jesus comes into somebody's life, people who are misfits get included. Right? They experience inclusion that they're not used to. But when people whose lives are pretty much together and they kind of have it going on, when Jesus comes into their lives, He seems to completely unfit them. Right? He blows everything up. And we're going to think about Mary's story briefly tonight, kind of in that light. Like, what happened to her life when Jesus came into it? It reminds me, if you're not Presbyterian, you won't know that this is cliche, but it reminds me of The Hobbit. when Gandalf came to the Shire and he was looking for people to accompany him on his adventure, he didn't get many takers because hobbits kind of have their life the way they want it. They're comfortable. They don't like the idea of unpredictability and risk and those kind of things. So Gandalf couldn't get any takers, the great wizard, for his adventure. And Bilbo said, you know, I should think not. I'm going on the adventure. He said, we're plain, quiet folk and have no wish for adventures. Nasty, disturbing, uncomfortable things that make you late for dinner. I can't see what anybody sees in them. Well, eventually, you know, Gandalf went to Bilbo Baggins into going on adventures with him. And his nice, predictable, comfortable life is completely turned upside down. Like, he's having, facing off with spiders and trolls and goblins. Oh, my. And he's getting help from huge eagles and elves and all sorts of crazy things that don't happen in the Shire. And they're happy that they don't. But Bilbo finds, as he goes on the adventures with Gandalf, that his little life is actually part of a much bigger picture. It has an importance that he couldn't have ever predicted. Right? Things he never could have seen if Gandalf hadn't come and hoodwinked him into going on these adventures with him. Which feels a little bit to me like what happened when Gabriel came to Mary. Right? He comes in what Tolkien would probably have called an unexpected party and breaks this news to her. Good news, he seems to think, but it blows her life up. I mean, Mary's a good girl. She's young, adolescent probably, you know, and she's doing what she's supposed to do. Her life's going well, you know, she's engaged and is going to get married just like she had dreamed of, just like the way she thought it should happen, the way it was going to go. And then Gabriel comes with good news. Putatively good news. Is it good news? I don't know if this is good news, right? This is great news on one hand, But it's kind of the worst news on the other hand. Because what happens to Mary's life now? Well, she's pregnant. That's great. Not yet. Great, but it's great. But now she's got to tell a fiancé and two pretty respectable families that she's pregnant. And I don't know. Would you have believed her? Joseph had an angel from God have to come and tell Joseph before he believed her. And I imagine he was still a little iffy about it. And she's going to have this baby while she's traveling and in a stable. That's not ideal. The people who come visit her in the hospital when she has the baby are people she doesn't know. They're dirty shepherds. Why are you here? I'm a minister. I usually try to go the third day after the baby's born, after the mom's had a shower. And they kick them out sooner now. It's harder to catch them at the hospital. But no, she got shepherds. When she took them to have the baby circumcised, they prophesied over the baby, which I don't think is part of the normal liturgy in the temple for circumcision. But saying he's going to be the cause of the rise and fall of many in Israel. And then he turns to Mary, who's standing there, and says, "And a sword will pierce your heart too." This is not what you expect or want to hear then. The wise men's visit is interesting, but weird. A little while later, and then within 2 years, Mary, whose life was going okay, has to pull up stakes in the middle of the night and flee her country and go live in Egypt as a refugee. You got to be thinking, well, what happened to my life? Right? It was going fine, and then Jesus came into it. And now it's upside down. Right? He unfits her. We were told when I was in college how to tell our testimony. I think it was so if someone asked us about our Christian faith, we wouldn't just mumble and stumble and say something heretical. But they taught us to tell our story, and what they would say is, well, just tell about your life before you became a Christian, and then how you became a Christian, and then how your life's been ever since you became a Christian. That makes pretty good sense. I can't imagine what Mary's testimony was. She's like, well, I was doing what I was supposed to do and minding my own business, and then Jesus came, and then my life has gone crazy ever since. I don't know if I'd recommend it, What happened to my life? And the thing is, I don't think this is all that abnormal. You may not have your life as together as Mary, but when Jesus comes into our lives, he kind of disrupts them. And kind of what you have to expect from him. And you want to say, well, that was Mary. We don't really compare ourselves to Mary. But it's pretty normal, actually, that when Jesus comes into our lives, he goes to work and does things that are not very pleasant and comfortable. He doesn't just advance our agendas like we maybe hoped that he would. And this takes us by surprise, especially in America, because we all are prone to a heresy. And it's called the prosperity gospel. I don't know if you know much about the prosperity gospel. It's about what it sounds like. It's like God wants you rich and healthy all the time. And if you have enough faith and behave well enough, he'll make sure. He'll be obligated to make you rich and healthy. There are crass versions of this when the minister stands up and says, the jet I've got isn't good enough. I need a better jet. Right? And you can recognize it when you see that. There's something off about that. But we all are prone to more subtle versions, which is basically, if I do what I'm supposed to do, God has to make my life work. He has to make my life work if I do what I'm supposed to do. If I'm good, my life has to go well. Or this is more insidious. If my life is going well, it must be because I'm good. Right? And that's an easy lie to believe, but it's a lie. It's not true. Politicians know that we're prosperity theologians all, because they tell us things like, hey, I realize that you're good people. And what this country really needs is for the bad people to start acting like you and voting like you for me. Right? And that works, right? Because we all do. Those people, the other people are bad. And if they would be like me, God would be obligated to make our country good, right? You know, we would force his hand because we're so stinking good that he'd have to make our country good. And that's prosperity gospel. Did you see the Shiny Happy People documentary? It was marking my Christian life upbringing in a really horrifying way. But it was this movement. The Duggars, who were kind of famous for having all the children, were involved in a movement. Bill Gothard Ministries, the Base of Youth Conflicts. You don't need to know about it. I hope you never know about it. But the premise was, basically, we'll codify life. We'll get biblical principles for every possible contingency that ever comes up in life. And if you follow these principles, you're guaranteed that your kids will be okay. And your life will go well. Right? And it's very appealing. They used to pack out the basketball arena in Atlanta when I was growing up, when he'd come to town for a week. And because it's so compelling. Like, oh, you mean my kids can be safe? I know they'll be good if I follow the rules. But it's prosperity gospel, right? It's prosperity. If I'm good, I put God in my debt and he has to act for me. And that's not Christianity, right? It's kind of the notion of Christianity you give. You know, you play a country music song backwards. You get your dollar back, right? Get your truck back. So you'll get the American dream sponsored by Jesus if you become Christian, right? And it's just, it's not true. I mean, you sort of get drawn into it when you see somebody whose life's been a big mess and they become a Christian and suddenly they kind of stabilize for a while, which is pretty impressive and amazing to see, right? And we think, well, maybe that's what it means. You become a Christian and then your life is normal and good and stable. But that doesn't last that long and it's not really the normal experience. Right? Because the prosperity teaching is not Christianity. Because Christianity is the teaching that we have what we have from God by his grace only as a gift. Nothing that we've earned. We don't have any behavior or faith or good works or anything that we can use as bargaining chips to try to force God to do what we want him to do. Everything we have from God is utter gift through what Jesus has done for us, not through anything that we deserve and earn. So we don't have any bargains to make. All you can pretty much say is what Mary said. Very impressively, but what she said, which was basically to Gabriel, she said, okay, you know, okay, I'm your servant. Let it be to me as you said. It's very beautiful faith for us to see in her, but it's really all anybody who's under God's grace can say. You can't negotiate, right, when you don't bring anything to the table. So, anyway, here's Mary. Now Jesus has come into her life, and now her life is less safe, and less organized, and less predictable, and less respectable. We don't pitch it that way for newcomers usually. Hey, become a Christian. Your life can become far less respectable. But ours did. Hard that people still drag her name through the dust, don't they? She became more vulnerable as well. And her life invited all kind of risk that she didn't experience before and grief that she didn't experience before. She gets humbled in a way she was never humiliated before. And her heart gets broken in a way that was never broken before. And it's not just Mary. I mean, her son, Jesus, said, in my kingdom, you lose it to find it. Right? You want to find your life, you lose your life. You want to follow me, you have to take up your cross and die a little bit every day to follow me. That's what he does in our lives. And I'm here to tell you, it's good. It's good. Ask a Christian who's been a Christian for a while if they trade it. And they'll tell you no. Right? It's like the only way you want to live. Here's what Bilbo said after he got back from his adventures and his life was messed up still, even though he was back home in the Shire. He said Bilbo found he'd lost more than his spoons. He'd lost his reputation. It's true that forever after he remained an elf friend and had the honor of dwarves and wizards and all such folks as ever passed that way. But he was no longer quite respectable. He was, in fact, held by all the hobbits of the neighborhood to be queer. He says, I'm sorry to say, he didn't mind. He was quite content. The sound of the kettle on his hearth was ever after more musical than it had been in the days before the unexpected party. His sword hung over the mantelpiece, and his coat of mail was arranged on a stand in the hall. So, Jesus comes into your life kind of like Gandalf did. Doesn't come to amenitize your life and make all of your plans and dreams successful finally. Because he's out for more than that in your life. He's not just here to give you amenities. He's here to make you new. He's here to make you human, really, for the first time. To live in the world that he's fixing in his mercy. And to conscript you in the adventures of helping as he does fix the world. What the Christian life involves. So, keep your sword over the mantle and your chainmail displayed in the hall, and say what Mary said. I'm your servant. Let it be to me as you said. Let's pray.